In David Leonhardt's piece in the New York Times, he describes the polls that missed their mark this year. Senator Susan Collins didn't lead in a single publicly released poll during the final 4 months of her reelection campaign in Maine, but she won the election comfortably. Collins, the Republican, reelected. Similarly, Senator Tom Tillis, North Carolina Republican, trailed in almost every poll conducted in his race. He won as well. And most polls underestimated the president's strength in Iowa, Florida, Michigan, Texas, Wisconsin, and elsewhere. Instead of winning in a landslide, as polls suggested, Joe Biden beat the president by fewer than 2 percentage points in the states deciding the election. So the question is, where do the polls of 2020 stand compared to previous years? And what are the problems of sampling and participation in polls today that have become more acute year by year? With us is Mark Blumenthal, principal at Mystery Pollster, a consultancy that works with various public opinion polling firms. He is a longtime pollster and campaign consultant. Thank you very much, Mark Blumenthal, for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So how did the results of 2020 compare, say, to 2016's presidential election results?
Well, I think there was more of a polling error, more of a miss. Than in 2016. But I think in talking about this subject, we need to try to hold two ideas at the same time, which is there was certainly an error. Polls missed Biden's margin by at the national level by what will probably end up being 3 to 4 points. And at the same time, that error was in the range of historical errors. That is, as Nate Silver put it in a piece a few days ago, polls weren't great, but that's pretty normal. There were errors as big or bigger in 2012, in 2000, in 1996, in 1980. And I think what we should do is focus on what was different this time. There was a polling miss that's a little harder to explain and a little harder to – it doesn't appear to be as much about a late shift in opinion or about third-party candidates making four late decisions.
Which happened 4 years ago, right? That was part of the factor of the miss there.
Right. One of the, in looking at the miss and the misses in 2016, there were, and I was part of a report by the American Association of Public Opinion Research. I was part of a team that looked at that error. We could see there were certainly third-party candidates who did well, who got support on polling that seemed to be inflated based compared to what they eventually received. Something like that was true for the 1996 race for Ross Perot, true in 1980, if you remember that far back. John Anderson was a third-party candidate.
Yeah.
Candidacies that may have attracted real appeal, but tended to diminish as it got closer to Election Day, making for a lot of late shifts. There was much less of that this time. There were very, very few voters who were undecided or who told us this time that they were still unsure about their choice. There was much more decision. So I think we have to focus this time more on a more difficult problem, which is, were our samples representative enough? Were we missing... was there a skew in the partisanship of those who were less likely to participate in surveys?
And it seems like this time there might have been, I understand historically, that had gone against Democrats in some elections. This time it seems that Republican voters were undercounted in the polls. Also with us is David Dutwin, Senior VP of Strategic Initiatives for the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago. Thank you, sir, for being with us. What's your sense of how polling went overall this year compared to 4 years ago and earlier?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think Mark does a great service to us in bringing in a little bit of history. And just to extend on that a little bit, when we look at Gallup, we have polling error on Gallup, unlike other places going back all the way to 1948. Since 1952, in 1980 was the largest error they ever experienced, and they got a lot of negative press for it. The very next election cycle, they experienced their smallest polling error in the history of the Gallup poll for presidential polling. Similarly, when you aggregate error across Senate polls, 2002 was the worst Senate election on error on record for polling. The 2 years later, we literally had the smallest, almost spot on polling. So, you know, people sort of suggest there's a trend here, but history really does sort of show that, you know, when it comes to polling error, there sort of tend to be, it's more likely the case that there tend to be somewhat unique factors that occur in a particular election cycle that don't appear in the future. Just one other example, I believe it was, I don't remember the year, but when you look at the partisanship of the errors, they really do flip-flop quite a bit. There have been years that have been plus three Democrat, and literally the very next election cycle, they're plus three Republican. So, you know, this is not to suggest that we don't have work to do, and that there is one trend that, you know, pollsters and survey researchers all alike have been concerned about, and that is that response rates have significantly declined since the mid-1990s, and even since the 1970s, really. And so we're getting to a point now where, you know, the more it declines, the greater there is a risk for there to be bias in surveys. Most research has found that declining response rates have not actually led to more bias in surveys. In fact, almost universally, research shows that is not the case, but it does raise the risk profile of it happening. And I think, you know, we saw that in this election.
Well, and the other question is, are there accompanying characteristics, views of surveying or answering pollsters' questions that go along with political orientation? And so, Mark Blumenthal, do we see that Republicans, on average, obviously not universally, but on average, might be more skeptical about talking with a pollster, concerned about, you know, that sort of link with an institution that would be conducting it? Does that introduce then more noise into the poll as you have to statistically balance that out? Mark, are you there? I guess we lost Mark Blumenthal. We'll try and get him back. If you have questions for our experts on polling, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. David Dutwin, so same question for you. I mean, are there other characteristics that might affiliate with party membership?
Yeah, I think that, you know, right now, of course, researchers such as Mark, myself, and many others are going to spend the next couple of months really researching this. At this point, you know, all we have is hunches and hypotheses, and the truth will bear out in the next couple of months. But I think, to me personally, some of the leading hypotheses are, number one, wondering if there is a bias for social trust. You know, we have had 4 years of a lot of messaging to distrust the mainstream media, to distrust science, to distrust the government, to distrust, as a consequence, I think, polling. And if that is true, that has, number one, led to people high in social mistrust to refuse to participate in public opinion surveys more than people low in trust, and social trust is related to whether you vote Republican or Democrat, then that would, of course, result in a bias in surveys. I think some other things people are thinking about is really looking back and making sure that the polls had the right balance of urban, rural, and suburban voters, given, again, a pretty clear partisan divide by what they call metropolitan status. And you know, in limited sense, I think pollsters are also looking at their cross-section of Latinos, particularly in Texas and Florida, where, you know, if you look at some of these analyses that I've seen already of the degree to which people may have shifted their partisanship from 2016 to 2020, that South Texas and South Florida Latinos have moved more than any other group. And so it doesn't mean polling didn't adequately capture them. But when you see movements that large from one party to another, it's certainly something to then look at in the polling and see how it did.
We're talking with David Dutwin of the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago, Mark Blumenthal, principal at Mystery Pollster Consultancy. If you have questions for our guests about polling of presidential elections and the challenge that pollsters face, increasing ones they're dealing with, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. And, you know, David, what you're talking about in terms of the president raising all these questions about institutions and trust, you could also argue chicken and egg from the opposite direction, that Trump is in some part a manifestation of that growing skepticism that many Americans have about institutions and about the kinds of organizations that conduct polling. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Mark Blumenthal, our polls at this point using rather different ways of trying to capture the spread of the electorate, or are the methodologies highly similar and the kinds of statistical methods that they do use to try and capture the larger population, are they pretty much the same?
They're very different, and I'm sorry that I dropped off there.
Oh, that's all right.
Boom, and just as I was about to answer your question, the call dropped. I hope that's not a metaphor for anything.
That's just fine.
There is a wide variety of approaches. The pollsters are taking a wide variety of approaches and took such in 2020. There are polls being done using the traditional telephone methods. Pollsters have been calling cell phones, of course, for more than a decade, but there are also surveys being done using different kinds of sampling online. There's experimentation with using text messaging for polling. So there's a wide variety of approaches, both in how we reach out to contact respondents and then in how we weight and analyze and sample. And unfortunately, there was no clear winner in the last election and in the previous month. This understatement of Trump's support seemed to, at least to my look at it, to affect polls across the spectrum of method and technique.
Mm-hmm. Susan in Culver City says, what I'm struggling to understand is how the polls can be within the margin of error for Biden, but be so off for so many House and Senate seats. She brings Maine to mind with Susan Collins. So, you know, how is it that you can have the one race seemingly close to what the actual result was, but then way off on the others? David Dutwin?
Sure. At the end of the day, when we look at survey research in general, you know, it's a real science. There's academic schools that teach and analyze the art and science of survey research. Margin of error is based on one type of potential error, which is the error that may come from flipping a coin, basically, right? We're interviewing 1,000 people to represent, you know, over 250 million or you know, or less than that for voters, but millions and millions of people. And, you know, just as you may flip a coin 10 times and get only three heads or four heads, there's this known possible error from sampling a full population. But that's not the only way that polls can have error. And in particular, as we were talking about earlier, you know, what we're concerned about is what's called non-response error, the fact that a majority of people refuse to actually participate in the poll. And if you know, simply put, Republicans refuse at greater rates than Democrats, and there isn't a useful method on the back end to adjust for that, then you have error that goes beyond the margin of error.
We have listener Renee, and then I need to wrap, who asks about, you know, there were a lot of first-time voters, it appears, who came out. Might they not have been captured in the polls? Mark Blumenthal?
That's a tougher case to make. I mean, it's certainly made for a different electorate. It depends on the method being used by the pollster, but most of the surveys done at the national level were taking in all adults. They weren't just beginning from a list of people who had previously voted. So, you'd have to somehow assume that they, you know, weren't being truthful about their intent to vote. And I think the bigger issue is, and this is why 2020 is harder, when there's a low turnout, when there's a primary election or a special election, the task of the pollster is much harder because you have to try to identify that likely electorate, and it's a relatively small slice of the full population. This election, by breaking all these turnout records, made that challenge, you know, it was less. There should have been less of a difference between, in our surveys, between the full look at all registered voters or all even all adults and those who voted. And so, that is a potential, culprit, the likely voter problem in looking at why polls missed. But I think it's less likely to be an important contributor to the error when all is said and done.
So fair to say, though, that all polling professionals are going to be looking very closely at their models and doing some fairly significant tweaks, would you say, going forward?
I think that's an absolute given, that everyone in the profession is looking at this problem and has been for some time. We're all evidence-driven people, and so we're going to be looking at the evidence before us and the evidence we can collect over in the coming months.
I want to thank you both very much. That's Mark Blumenthal of Mystery Pollster. He's principal at that consultancy, which works with public opinion polling firms. And David Dutwin of the University of Chicago's National Opinion Research Center, where he's senior VP of the center's strategic initiatives. Both of them with great expertise on the science of polling. Coming up on Air Talk, Proposition 15 went down to defeat. It would have created a split roll and would have taken a big chunk out of Proposition 13, that historic ballot initiative which Californians passed to keep property tax rates low. We'll talk about what comes next in the future of Prop 13 after the loss of Prop 15. We'll be back in 90 seconds.